My name is Becky Klingler, and I'm here today from the EPA's Office of Inspector General, which we also call the OIG, to talk about one of our new reports. Joining me is Bo Chung from the OIG's Office of Program Evaluation.
Thanks, Becky. I'm happy to be here.
Bo, the title of the program evaluation report that we are going to talk about today is Improved Data and EPA Oversight Are Needed to Assure Compliance with the Standards for Benzene Content in Gasoline. First thing first, what is benzene? Why is it in gasoline? And why does the EPA care how much benzene is in gasoline?
Those are great questions. Benzene is a natural component of crude oil and an important component of gasoline because of its high octane rating. It is a colorless, highly flammable liquid with a sweet smell. You know that smell that everyone associates with gas stations? That's the benzene in the gasoline. Unfortunately, benzene is also a known air toxic, a pollutant that causes cancer. Long-term exposure to benzene has been linked to blood disorders and cancers of the blood, like leukemia. Children are thought to be at an increased risk from benzene because of their lower body weights and their respiration rates compared to adults. When gasoline is burned, benzene is released into the air as a byproduct from the incomplete combustion of chemicals in the gasoline. It is also released when gasoline evaporates. The main way people are exposed to benzene is by breathing in air that has benzene in it.
Can you tell us what steps the EPA has taken to protect the environment and human health from air toxics like benzene?
Sure. In 2007, the EPA implemented the Mobile Source Air Toxics Rule, which is designed to limit the amount of toxics put into the air by mobile sources.
What do you mean by mobile sources?
Motorcycles, cars, trucks, buses, airplanes, trains, recreational vehicles like ATVs and snowmobiles, and even lawnmowers are considered mobile sources. Anything with an engine that is fueled by gasoline. The EPA's Mobile Source Air Toxics Rule specifically addresses air toxics emissions from on-road passenger vehicles such as cars and light-duty trucks.
So how do you limit the benzene that these mobile sources put into the air?
The EPA's Mobile Source Air Toxics Rule helps reduce air toxics in three ways. One, by setting emission standards for passenger vehicles. Two, by defining controls for portable fuel containers that help reduce the amount of gasoline that evaporates, permeates from, or is spilled from those containers. And three, by setting standards for the benzene content in gasoline. This third component is what we focus on when we did this evaluation.
Can you explain what the standards are for benzene and who is responsible for meeting these standards?
Absolutely. The Mobile Source Air Toxics Rule requires that the facilities that make gasoline or bring it into the country, the gasoline refineries and importers, do two things. First, each facility must make sure that the annual benzene concentration of its gasoline does not exceed an average of 0.62 volume percent.
Let me make sure I understand what you just said. Some batches of gasoline produced may include more than the allowable benzene concentration, and some batches may contain less, but taken as a whole, the concentration of the benzene and the gasoline produced by any one facility in any given year should not be more than 0.62 volume percent.
That's right, Becky. Now, sometimes facilities exceed the 0.62 limit. If they do, the EPA says they can offset this excess, which the EPA calls a benzene deficit, the next year. This means that however much a facility goes over the 0.62 limit in 1 year, it must be that much under the limit the following year. Also, a facility cannot have deficits in two consecutive years. But that leads us to the second way that EPA is trying to limit the amount of benzene in our air. The refineries and the importers must make sure that the average benzene concentration of their gasoline is never more than 1.30 volume percent. So even if a facility exceeds the 0.62 limit, they must stay under the 1.30 volume percent standard.
So the facilities that don't stay within these limits are not in compliance with federal regulations, right?
Technically, yes, but remember that the EPA's primary goal is to reduce the overall benzene levels in our air. So there are ways for companies who can't or don't meet these standards to still be in compliance with federal regulations.
Okay, how can that happen?
Here's how. Facilities that are able to successfully produce gasoline below the 0.62 volume percent standard earn what the EPA calls benzene credits. Facilities that don't meet the standards, that have a benzene deficit, can actually buy these credits from other facilities. They can then use these credits to offset any excess benzene concentrations, bringing their gasoline into compliance with the federal regulations. Facilities can also keep any credits they earn in case they need these credits to meet the standard in the future.
And how does the EPA monitor whether the facilities are in compliance with these standards?
The refiners and importers must provide the EPA with three types of reports throughout the year. First, for each batch of gasoline produced or imported, they must submit what the EPA calls a batch report that specifies the volume and benzene concentration for each batch of gasoline. Some facilities submit more than 200 batch reports each year. Second, each facility must submit an annual report that shows how much gasoline was produced that year and what the average annual and maximum benzene concentration for this gasoline was. The values in the annual benzene report should be based on all the facility's batch reports. And third, they must submit information regarding how many credits they earned, sold, or purchased.
How does the EPA use these reports?
Well, the EPA depends on these reports to assess whether the facilities are complying with the benzene standards. Facilities upload their reports to the EPA's reporting system, which is called the Office of Transportation and Air Quality, DC Fuel Reporting System. That's a lot to say, so we'll just refer to it as the EPA's reporting system.
Okay, so just to summarize, the EPA is trying to reduce the amount of benzene in the air by setting limits on how much benzene can be in gasoline. Facilities that exceed these limits can bring themselves into compliance with federal regulation by offsetting their excess concentration. And the facilities must submit reports to the EPA detailing how much gasoline they produced, what the benzene concentration of this gasoline was, and whether they earned, bought, or sold credit. And the EPA looks at these reports to determine whether these companies are complying with the benzene standard.
That's right, and we at the OIG wanted to look at how well this system was working.
How did you do that?
We looked at all the annual and batch reports submitted by facilities over a four-year period from 2011 to 2014.
And what did you find?
Well, we found that over the course of those 4 years, anywhere from 5% to 7.7% of facilities that submitted batch reports did not submit the required annual report. These annual reports either were never submitted at all, or the EPA couldn't process the submitted files because they were corrupt, or could not, for other reasons, be uploaded to the EPA's reporting system.
Can you translate that 5% to 7.7% into real numbers for us?
Sure. Anywhere from 299 to 322 facilities submitted batch reports each year in the 2011 through 2014 timeframe, which means that the EPA was missing annual reports from 16 to 20 facilities each year. We also found that 9 facilities didn't submit their batch reports from 2011 to 2014. Because we didn't have these batch reports, we couldn't verify whether the annual reports submitted by these 9 facilities were accurate or not. Based on the annual reports, each of these facilities produced between 1.4 million and 800 million gallons of gasoline in the year their batch reports were missing. That's a lot of gasoline unaccounted for.
When you were able to compare the batch report and annual report, when the company submitted both reports as required, what did you find?
Well, we found that overall, both the batch and the annual reports contained a significant number of errors and data quality issues. For example, the total volume of gasoline and the average benzene concentration listed in the annual reports did not reconcile to the volumes and concentrations calculated from the batch reports about a third or 30% of the time. There were other errors in these reports as well, like the invalid product codes and identification numbers, incorrect dates, rounding errors in terms of the number of decimal points used, And I'm just going to jump ahead of you right now and tell you why these are significant findings. All of these data quality issues contribute to calculation errors. And any calculation errors related to the volume of gasoline produced and the benzene concentration of this gasoline impact the integrity of the benzene credit program. If the concentration of benzene is overstated, if a facility that says its benzene concentration is higher than it actually is, then the facility may be facing an inflated benzene deficit when no problem may actually exist. The facility could actually be in full compliance with the standards. But because of the calculation error, the facility must spend time and possibly money to correct a so-called deficit. On the flip side, if a facility understates its benzene concentration, if it says that the concentration is lower than it actually is, it may receive a benzene credit that is unearned and unwarranted. Generating and selling such false credits is a violation of the regulations.
And if you overstate or understate benzene concentration, the true environmental and health impacts of the standard and the mobile source air toxic rule would also be hidden or misunderstood, right?
Yes, that's right. For example, understated concentrations would suggest an environmental benefit that did not actually occur. In other words, the EPA would think that benzene concentrations in gasoline were reduced, and therefore that the amount of benzene in the air was reduced as well, when that actually may not have happened.
Can you tell us whether the inaccuracies found in the report you looked at were overstatement or understatement?
The net effect of the discrepancies between the batch reports and the annual reports we looked at was an understatement of benzene concentrations. This means that more facilities inaccurately reported that they were under the 0.62 limit and were therefore given more benzene credits than were actually earned. This also means that because companies are understating the benzene concentrations in their gasoline, any calculations of how much benzene is being emitted to the air from this gasoline may also be understated. Or on the opposite side of the same coin, any predicted reductions of the benzene in the air as a result of the mobile source air toxics rule may be overstated. There could be more benzene emissions to the air from this gasoline than we think.
What about the policies and procedures that the EPA has in place to catch these errors? Don't they help catch some of the mistakes in these reports so that the integrity of the program is sustainable?
The EPA does have procedures in place that are designed to assure the accuracy of the information submitted in the reports. For example, the gasoline facilities are required to have yearly audits done by independent auditors, and these auditors are the ones who actually calculate whether a facility has a benzene credit or deficit. However, the independent auditors are only required to look at the annual reports, not at the batch reports. As I said earlier, the total volumes and annual average benzene concentrations in the annual benzene reports do not always match the values calculated from the batch reports. So we took a look at 13 facilities that the OIG identified as having benzene deficits at least 2 years in a row. And we looked at the reports submitted by their independent auditors to see whether they reached the same conclusions. We found that the independent auditors identified benzene deficits 2 years in a row for only one of these 13 facilities.
What about the system the EPA itself has in place?
Sure, we looked at the EPA systems too. First, the EPA's oversight of the reports submitted by the independent auditors could be strengthened. The EPA couldn't locate all of these reports when we asked for them, and the agency does not routinely review these reports. Second, the EPA's reporting system, where all the facilities upload their reports, does not identify when reports are missing or if they are any data quality issues. It does not have the capability to check whether the data in the reports are complete and accurate. Errors and missing reports have to be manually identified by EPA personnel. The EPA staff responsible for overseeing report submissions do not routinely check the reports submitted or follow up with facilities about data that looks problematic. EPA personnel did say that they are planning to update the reporting process to make it more automated with built-in checks to ensure data quality. However, the EPA stated that this effort requires a lot of resources and must be weighed against other funding priorities. Third, the EPA uses another automated and electronic credit tracking system called the EPA Moderated Transaction System, or EMTS, to track the benzene credits of each facility, as well as which companies buy and sell benzene credits. This system has several built-in checks to ensure the integrity of any credit transactions made. However, when the EPA started using this system in May 2015, the facilities were asked to enter their credit balances and information into the system. Whether the facilities entered this information correctly was never verified. And at the end of each reporting period, the facilities generating credits enter the information from their annual reports into the EMTS. We've already established that the annual report data are not always accurate, which means the information going into EMTS is not always accurate.
Bo, if the reports are not always accurate, then it seems to me that the EPA may not be able to provide effective oversight of the benzene standard. In other words, can they really tell which facilities are complying and which are not?
In fact, Becky, one of our audit objectives was to look at EPA oversight and enforcement capabilities. But before I answer your question, let's talk about some general tools and procedures the EPA uses to assess compliance. The EPA office that oversees compliance assurance activities and enforces the mobile source air toxics rule is called the Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance, or OECA. OECA staff do a high-level review of the annual reports and batch reports submitted for each year. They can also perform detailed evaluations of specific facilities using a compliance assessment tool.
The OIG's program evaluation report mentioned that the EPA developed an enforcement tool in March 2014. Is this the tool you were just talking about?
Yes, the system was definitely a noteworthy achievement for the EPA. It reviews the data for all reports related to the EPA's fuel regulations, including the benzene standards. It takes a look at broader trends and not just 1 year's worth of data. And when this tool flags a potential compliance problem, EPA staff can go back and do an in-depth evaluation of the annual and batch reports. Based on this information and a variety of other factors, if it still appears there is a violation, OECA inspectors and contractors can do on-site visits. If a facility is determined to be in non-compliance, then OECA determines what enforcement actions are necessary.
Okay, so by using these tools and procedures, is the EPA able to tell who is complying or not?
Well, when the OIG did our review of the annual and batch reports submitted from 2011 to 2014, we found 40 facilities that appear to be non-compliant with the benzene standards. However, the EPA has not identified these potential non-compliance issues in 16 of these cases. Now, in another 16 cases, both the EPA and OIG identified the same non-compliance issues. For the remaining 8 facilities that the OIG identified as being potentially out of compliance with the benzene standards, the EPA had already looked at them and concluded there were no violations.
What about the enforcement aspect of the benzene standard? Is the EPA able to enforce the consequences for any facilities found to be in non-compliant? And what is that penalty?
There are several factors that contribute to any enforcement action taken and penalty imposed. For example, OECA says their staff is limited, so they focus on those violations that have the greatest potential environmental impact. If a financial penalty is imposed, the amount is based on a February 2016 policy called the Clean Air Act Mobile Source Fuels Civil Penalty Policy. That's a mouthful. The size of the penalty most likely will reflect how harmful the violation is to the environment. Of the 16 facilities that we both identify as being non-compliant, the EPA had taken enforcement action in one of these cases. When we started our evaluation, the EPA had not yet taken any action against the 15 other facilities. However, during the course of our evaluation, the EPA did take steps to begin addressing the potential violations at 10 of these other 15 facilities.
Bo, before we wrap this up, can you just quickly tell us what recommendations are being made in the report so that the EPA can address these findings and strengthen its oversight of the benzene standard?
Sure, Becky. The OIG makes 10 recommendations. 7 deal directly with reporting requirements. For example, we are recommending that the EPA makes sure that the annual and batch reports match and that each facility submits all required reports. We also recommend that the independent auditors verify the information in the annual reports by comparing them to the batch reports so that they can accurately calculate the benzene credit or deficit for each facility. We also are recommending that the EPA verify the information input into the EMTS by the facilities. The other 3 recommendations deal with enforcement. For example, we are recommending that the EPA look at the 16 facilities that the OIG identified as possibly non-compliant to determine whether enforcement is warranted and that they continue considering action against the other 15 facilities we both identify as non-compliant.
Do we know yet whether the agency agreed to implement the OIG's recommendations?
The EPA has, in general, agreed with our recommendations. In fact, they have already completed 2 of the 10. Specifically, they are looking into the 16 facilities that the OIG identified as possibly non-compliant. And as I mentioned earlier, they have begun the process to address the violations at the 15 other facilities we both identify as non-compliant. The EPA has also submitted corrective action plans for the other 8 recommendations. However, because the agency is still in the process of deciding how to best use extremely constrained program resources, the EPA could only provide estimated completion dates for 3 of these 8. This means that 5 of the recommendations are unresolved. The 3 recommendations that are currently being addressed by the EPA include obtaining all the missing reports and providing the enforcement staff with direct access to all reports submitted for the fuel programs.
Bo, thank you so much for your time today. For more information about this program evaluation or any other audit or evaluation, listeners can access all of our reports on the EPA OIG website, www.epa.gov/OIG.
Thanks, Becky.